Are there some other things in the Cisco portfolio that you really think are going to be leveraged in the new work environment going forward?
We're trialing what's something called WebEx Hologram, so that I can have a photorealistic view of Michael. And instead of seeing you, bad hair, you know, in the morning, I could be seeing this amazing photo hologram of Mike that is so realistic, it feels like that you're in the room.
Welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Mike Katz, president of the T-Mobile Business Group. Today, we are privileged to be talking with Jerry Elliott, Chief Customer and Partner Officer for Cisco. Jerry is on everybody's list of digital movers and shakers, both in the US and worldwide. As a leader at IBM, Microsoft, Juniper Networks, and now at Cisco, Jerry has transformed global businesses for more than half of her career. At Cisco, she leads all of sales, all systems engineering, marketing, and channel strategies for all of Cisco's revenue globally. Wow! She is a member of the executive leadership team at Cisco, is on the board of directors for Whirlpool and Marketta, and she's a founder of Broadrooms.com, a platform for women executives serving on boards. Well, Jerry, thank you so much for being here. I was telling you earlier, you've been an elusive guest. I've been trying to get you to do this for a long time, so I'm so glad we finally got you here.
It's so great to be here. Thank you for asking me.
One of the things I want to ask you about first, and first actually thank you for, is this last 2 years, we have been essentially running our company on WebEx. It's the way that we've stayed connected. It's the way that we've done business. For us, we bought Sprint in the middle of this pandemic. So it's the way that we connected with all these new teams. And so on behalf of all of T-Mobile and our 75,000 employees, I wanted to say thank you for keeping us connected this last couple of years.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. That makes us feel so fabulous. We truly are honored and humbled and blessed to have been part of, in a small way, what's happened over the last 2 years. It's unbelievable that 90% of the world went home during this pandemic because they had to, right? And we have been able to keep governments running, healthcare providers providing, first responders responding, and businesses operating. So it's just amazing. And I'm sure you've seen this, what's happened over the last couple of years in terms of digital transformation by necessity, right? 75% of the CIOs say that their projects have been accelerated. So paradigms have shifted and budgets have been reallocated and cultures have changed over the last couple of years and because it's had to. And we're just excited to have been a small part of that.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. You know, for us, when I think back to pre-pandemic, meeting on video was not a part of our culture
at
all. It was all physical presence. And quite frankly, that was a disadvantage for us, especially now that we are an integrated company with Sprint and we've got such a distributed workforce. The reality is almost every meeting has a hybrid element to it. So while the last 2 years, there was lots of things that were terrible about it, it was a great forcing function for us to start incorporating video and virtual participation into our work style.
Well, think about what's happening going forward, right? You just said it, 97% of every meeting going forward is going to have somebody that is remote. Whereas before it was mandatory, people had to work remotely. But now hybrid work is what people want to do. People don't want to have to come back to the office 5 days a week. And so what is that going to do for a company's culture when every meeting going forward, somebody is going to be remote? Facilities are going to have to be rethought. Cultures are going to have to be reconsidered. Because when that person's not in the room, and studies also show that 50% of the time, participants don't even speak up. So what is the technology and the tools that you're going to use in your company to ensure that everybody participates, everybody feels included, everybody doesn't feel like a second-class citizen because they don't happen to be in the room.
Yeah.
So it's super interesting going forward.
What are some of those technologies that have you particularly excited? I mean, obviously video will continue to be a big part of it, but are there some other things in the Cisco portfolio that you really think are going to be leveraged in the new work environment going forward?
We think so. So we're really proud of the collaboration suite that we have right now with WebEx. And we've taken the mission of our company that we changed over the last couple of years. We changed it to power an inclusive future for all. And so every bit of technology that we bring to the marketplace, we think about inclusivity. So WebEx, as an example, I just told you that 50% of the people don't participate in a normal meeting. Well, you can have a function within WebEx that says a person can't speak twice unless everybody on the call has spoken at least once. There's new technology that allows you to do translation, immediate translation. So I could be speaking in Japanese, you could be speaking in Mandarin, we could understand each other like that. There's sign language recognition now. Right now, it recognizes if I've done a thumbs up or a thumbs down, but that technology is now going to be used so that I could be signing, and immediately that could be translated to you. And you think about, well, wow, that makes everybody equal and equal participants in the room. So I love the technology that's coming out right now from a WebEx perspective, but there's so much more coming. Virtual reality is another one. We're trialing what's something called WebEx hologram so that I can have a photorealistic view of Michael. And instead of seeing you, bad hair, you know, in the morning, I could be seeing this amazing photo hologram of Mike that is so realistic, it feels like that you're in the room.
That's both amazing and scary, I think.
A little creepy, yeah. I know. Thank you.
This is going to sound like a shameless plug, but when you talk about those kind of things like instantaneous language translation mm-hmm. or holograms, you know, how do some of those technologies start to intersect with some of the big new technologies that are emerging like 5G?
Well, we need you and your capabilities to be able to enable that type of technology at the edge. That's why I'm so excited about what Timo's doing and the capabilities that you have, whether that is from a collaboration perspective or from an IoT perspective, when you think about how much bandwidth is needed in healthcare, in education. During the pandemic, 1.2 billion kids went home and did hybrid education or virtual education. We can't do that without the capabilities that you can provide with your technology. And the intersection now of 5G and Wi-Fi 6, that huge capability that's coming, is going to be a game changer for several different industries, whether that is transportation or utility or education or gaming, as an example. It's just going to drive more and more capacity to the edge. So we're thrilled with the capabilities you can bring to the market.
Yeah. When you're talking to CIOs about some of these kinds mm-hmm. of technologies, whether it's Wi-Fi 6, mm-hmm. 5G, some of the applications that you all are developing that leverage the capabilities of those, if you're a CIO, how should they be thinking about these technologies? What are some of the things that you think are critical as they're doing their long-term technology planning that they need to know and need to be thinking about on how these technologies integrate into their business?
It doesn't matter what customer call I make, we always end up talking about four areas. Right now, it is key that customers are optimizing their application experience. It used to be that the application was an extension of someone's brand. Right now, the app is the brand. That's what people see day in and day out. And having that app be optimized for performance, for an experience that customers want, the end users want, is incredibly important. So we always end up talking about what does that mean from a visibility perspective, from an observability perspective. Where are the bottlenecks? Is it the network? Is it on the edge? Is it back in the data center? Where is that exactly? And our capabilities help you do that all the way from the bare metal all the way up through the application itself. So we always talk about that. We end up talking about security. Cybersecurity is up 600% in the last several years. And end-to-end security means everything. When we sent everyone home because we had to, the threat landscape became so much broader. And so end-to-end security from the cloud to the data center to the edge is incredibly important. Then, of course, there's hybrid work. And hybrid work isn't just about the collaboration tool. It's just what we were talking about, right? It's the facilities. It's IoT. It's the culture of the company. It's everything now. All aspects of the company, HR, the IT organization, the go-to-market organization has to think about what that means now from a hybrid work perspective. And lastly, if you're going to do all those other three, you have to think about your infrastructure. Does your infrastructure have the capacity, the capability, the technology to enable that? So we always end up talking about those four areas of the business that, quite frankly, the pandemic accelerated in terms of digital transformation. And now it's just, now can you be ready for the future?
Yeah. When you meet with CIOs that are getting it right, meeting those challenges, what are some of the common things that you see in terms of how they're prioritizing across those four things? Because all four of those can be monster projects and initiatives in and of themselves. But you know, if you can think of some of the, you know, called best in class or the CIOs that are just really getting it right, what are some of the common things that you're seeing from them?
Well, I don't think you can do one versus the other. I think you have to look at all four, but I think it starts with the app. I think it starts with the experience that your customers see, your partners see, and your employees see. And then you work back from there to say, am I delivering the most secure, productive capabilities that I possibly can? And that's why those four things, a good CIO has to think about all four of those.
I want to shift a little bit and talk about you and you as a leader. You've had just an incredible career across some of the biggest, most iconic companies in the world. And you know, one of the things I'd love to hear from you is what are some of the things that you think about or have been important principles for you as a leader and now as a, you know, one of the most senior technology leaders in the country.
Well, thank you for the kind words, but you said the operative word for me, and that's principle. I always believe that you have to start with a set of principles that are your true north in terms of where you want to go as a leader. And for me, very early in my career, I had decided that I wanted to be authentic. What you see is what you get. I remember a meeting with my first line manager very early. I was just an account manager at the time. And we had a really, really tough customer call. And we were leaving the customer call. We got everything that we wanted. Customer was happy, we were happy. And at the end of the customer call, as we were debriefing afterwards, she said to me, you know, you're going to have to change your personality. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, you were too nice. You were too nice and you were too feminine. And 100 years ago, Mike, when I started in this business, I was wearing suits and ties. I had the little, you know, the little skinny tie that everybody wore. And I thought to myself, are you kidding me? I can't change who I am. If I want to be kind and I want to be feminine, I'm going to have to figure out a way to be successful. And so principle number one for me early on was to be who I was, the best version of myself. I continue to learn. I continue to unlearn, which I think is just an important characteristic as well. But for me, being authentic and being true to who I was as a leader was first and foremost, and it's helped me be successful all these years.
Something that you just said that really resonates with me is the learning and unlearning, because I feel like as leaders, one of the worst things that you can do, worst leadership, the mistakes that you can make is stop learning and think that you know everything. Mm-hmm. But I think learning takes a lot of self-awareness. You have to be comfortable and like vulnerable that maybe you're not great at everything, which I think is hard for some leaders to
what?
Do.
What?
Yeah.
You're not?
Believe it or not. Yeah. Believe it or not. So I like as you think about like self-awareness and really kind of reflecting mm-hmm. on yourself, on the things that you're good at and not good at. How's that affected both like how you prioritize learning, but also maybe in the way that you construct teams? Mm-hmm. Because you know, I've always found that if you don't know what you're good and not good at, it makes it really difficult for you to build a team that complements your skill set.
I completely agree. Look, you have to be authentic. You have to be humble. You have to be kind, and you have to know what your superpower is. And everybody has one. A manager said to me once when I was considering whether I wanted to change careers, come out of go-to-market and go do something else. And I did broaden in during a particular stage of my career. And he said to me, but you know what your fastball is, right? I said, what do you mean? What's a fastball? I'm not sure I understand. And he said, there is something everybody has that's your superpower. It's your fastball that you get to throw. And yours happens to be go-to-market, sales and marketing and services, et cetera. And that, it resonated with me because it made me feel confident that, yeah, you're right. I love that. It is my superpower. And so I'm gonna throw that fastball. That's gonna be mine to do. And so when I create a team or I'm on a team, I look for everybody's fastball to say, well, that one's, that I know what superpower they have and what superpower that person has. I know what my weaknesses are, and I try to create a team that exploits the superpowers, but also reinforces those areas that I know I'm weak in.
Yeah. How have, you know, it from IBM to Juniper to Cisco, like how have you evolved yourself as a leader with all of these experiences that you've had at these companies and managing different teams and different kinds of teams?
Well, I'll say I always thought of my career in three areas. The first part of my career, the first third, I'd say, was doing things that I was supposed to do. And I started my career at IBM, and it was very regimented. So you go, you do this, and then you do this, and then you do that. And it was just learning as much as I can and getting the basics. The second third of my career were taking risks, taking chances, going into areas of the business that I knew nothing about, but that I wanted to learn, or areas of the world. I moved to Tokyo for 2 years to run a piece of IBM's business in Asia Pacific. That was incredibly rewarding. Being a female gaijin with a guy's name and a senior title from a blue chip company living in Japan, that was amazing. The last third of my career has been all about heart and mind together. Going with companies that where our values aligned with mine, right? IBM, Microsoft, Juniper, now Cisco. Things that I'm passionate about. That's why I love that our mission is powering an inclusive future for all. That resonates with me. There's so much inequality out there that it's important that we do something about it and make an impact. So that's how I've thought about the career.
I want to ask you about the risk-taking that you said, because mm-hmm. I imagine packing up and moving to Asia had to be scary.
It was.
And one of the things that I've always found in my own career is the opportunities that I had that scared me the most were the ones that I got the most out of. And I don't know if you feel the same way, or you know, as you've thought about some of these different opportunities you've taken, how much of it was scary and felt like a big risk, but really paid off for you in the end?
I think I can attribute that to Sheryl Sandberg, who said you have to do something every single day that terrifies you. I think you're absolutely right. And almost, I've had 7 life-changing promotions in my career. And every single one of them, I was absolutely petrified and didn't know what I was doing. But I felt like, again, if I stood with my principles, adhered to my principles of being who I was, being authentic, being kind, being humble, knowing what I could do and what I couldn't do, that I'd be able to move forward. And so it's worked for me.
Yeah. I know you're a huge advocate for women's leadership. Mm-hmm. And I talked at the top about what you've done with Broadroom.com. Can you talk just a little bit about what that is, why it was important for you to start it, and what the mission for the group?
I appreciate that. So, you know, when I started in tech over 40 years ago, my first line, my second line, and my third line managers were all women. So I thought technology was the most diverse industry ever. Little did I know that almost for the rest of my career, I'd be the only woman in the room. And so it's always been a passion of mine to make sure that I gave back, that I reached behind me and brought women forward and paid it forward for those women that helped me early in my career. One of the areas was around joining a corporate board. And 70% of corporate board directors are sourced from other directors. So it was a pretty incestuous circle of directors, and I couldn't figure out how to tap into that. And I thought if I just told my 5 best girlfriends who were all corporate board directors that I wanted to be on a board, that it would come like that. And I realized it didn't, that I had to work at it. And so I put a plan together on developing a network, educating myself, realizing what true value proposition I could offer a board of directors. And when I finally cracked into it and got my first 2 corporate boards within a week's time, Fortune asked me to write an article about what I did. And as I was typing it, I was trying to type boardroom, and I wrote broad rooms. And I thought that was the universe giving me a sign that it was time that I did something about it. And that's what I did. I created a website that was a one-stop shopping for women who didn't know what to do, didn't know where education, what educational opportunities there were out there, or recruiters that could help them, or membership organizations that could also help. So it was a one-stop shopping. And Broad Rooms is now incorporated in EWOB, Executive Women on Boards. And so I'm really proud to send it their way and let them incorporate it into their own resources.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I want to come back to that in a second, but I want to ask you one more just kind of general women's leadership question. As people are thinking about constructing a team and bringing leaders onto their team, mm-hmm. And really want to ensure that they have equity across their team, what are some things that you've seen that traits that maybe are just more inherent in women that can help that help them have unique success in technology and in sales?
Well, don't be afraid of technology. I was a political science major. I know you were a sociology major as well. And so think about the broader disciplines associated with this industry that you and I both love. There's sales, there's engineering, there's HR, there's legal, right? There's a role to play for women who aren't in STEM, but want to be in technology itself. And there's absolutely, you asked about traits, there's nothing that we can't do in any particular industry. So just know what your superpower is and lead with that and exploit it.
Yeah. What's that experience been like for you as a director versus being in, you know, big management roles at companies? Are there things that surprised you, things that you've learned that have been unique from that experience?
You know, it's amazing to see a business from a different altitude. When you sit on a board of directors, it's a completely different set of skill sets that may have made you successful as an operating exec. And every board of directors wants to know one thing about Mike or Jerry. Can they make the leap from being an operating exec to a corporate board director? And so I was lucky. I had either attended or presented at my own board of directors for probably the last 15 years of my career. And I always say I wear a different hat. When I walk into a boardroom, I take off my operating hat and I put on my director hat. My job as a director is to be noses in and fingers out. It's not to do, it's to advise, it's to coach, it's to probe. So it's a different skill set and a different altitude to see that business and hopefully use the things that I've learned over the last 40 years to help that business be successful.
Is there anything that you've taken from that that's helped you in your operating roles?
100%. I wish, I didn't know this when I was an operating executive interacting with my board, and I thought that the board was almost like this blob, you know, a girls' soccer team that always just kind of, you think of them as a group, you don't think of them as individuals. And it wasn't until I was on a board that I realized the skill sets of people that are sitting on that board of directors. Why didn't I use them to my advantage? Why didn't I reach out to them individually and ask for their coaching and counseling? I do now, but I wish I had known that when I was an operating exec.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. We typically end these interviews with some rapid fire questions. I don't know if you're up for those.
Okay, I think I am.
All right, so what is your favorite TV show right now?
Ted Lasso,
I mean, that's like everybody's favorite TV show. What about your favorite Ted Lasso quote?
Be a goldfish. I think he stole that from me, I'm sorry. Goldfish have 10 second memories. And that's why they can be in a bowl going, nice castle, nice castle, nice castle. You got to forget your mistakes and just be the happiest person on the planet, like a goldfish.
Yeah. Isn't it great that there's a show that's like just oozing and positive?
I love it.
It's like, it feels like so unique right now. I love that show too. It's the holidays coming up. What's your favorite way to spend holidays?
Christmas morning, we have 73 neighbors and friends that come to our house for waffles and mimosas, and you have to come dressed in pajamas, and you have to play a special game that we force you to play. So Christmas morning.
And just like, is the game predetermined or just?
Oh yeah, it's okay. The same game every year.
Okay. You said mimosas, but When you're thinking of holiday specific drinks, mm-hmm. are you toddy or eggnog?
Neither, man. It's got to be hot chocolate with a lot of whipped cream.
What is the first thing that you do when you wake up?
I am obsessed with this game called Spelling Bee. Do you know it?
No.
New York Times. I'm part of the Hive, which is this game that you have to play every morning. It board changes at midnight Pacific time, and it's the first thing I do when I wake up. I gotta play Spelling Bee.
And you actually have to spell words?
You have to spell words, and they're different levels of accomplishment. So the goal is to get to genius level every single day. And if you get every word on that board, you're Queen Bee.
Yeah, that's probably why I haven't played it. My kids actually make fun of me when they bring their spelling words home, and then they quiz me on them and think it's really funny that I can't get any of them right. Yeah, that's my, that's not my superpower, speaking of superpowers. One of the things I've seen on your Twitter, and I'd love for you to share it here, is advice you'd give yourself as a 20-year-old.
Oh, wow. Well, I tell my children this. So number one, have a plan, work your plan, but be open to any possibility that might come your way. That's the first thing. I think the second thing would be a global citizen. Truly explore the world, because it's important that we all power an inclusive future for all. So be part of the solution.
Yeah, those are both amazing. I love the first piece of advice because, I mean, maybe it's a generational thing, but mm-hmm. I see with my own kids and with kids that are their age, they like have such a structured plan for themselves, and sometimes it's to their own detriment. And
exactly.
So I love the idea of have a plan, but be flexible with that. I think it's just great advice. One last really important one. You worked with my supervisor at Microsoft.
Oh.
So any good Mike Sievert dirt that you can give us?
Oh my gosh, Mike Sievert has the most interesting history of any executive I've ever met. And when I got to know him so well at Microsoft, I literally would just quiz him about all the different experiences he has, and he has fantastic stories. So if folks don't know every little in and out of his experience, he's got to share. It's amazing.
So no dirt. You're not going to give me any dirt.
I'm not giving you any dirt whatsoever. None.
Jerry, thank you so much for doing this. This is so wonderful.
This is so fun.
Yeah, it's so great to have you. Thank you for everything that you're doing. It's just amazing to have the opportunity to talk to you, see what you're doing, the impact that you've had, the partnership that you bring to T-Mobile is just amazing. And you know, you're a real role model to all executives, but you know, particularly to women executives that are aspiring to accomplish even a tad of what you've done.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. As a reminder, for each episode this season of Taking Care of Business, we are excited to expand our Project 10 Million donation to a school district of our guest choice, making further progress towards bridging the schoolwork gap. To everyone watching and listening, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Taking Care of Business.